This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. New Hampshire poet Jennifer Militello's new collection of poems, A Camouflage of Specimens and Garments, gathers poems that she's written over the past 8 years. With precise and surprising language, Militello takes us through life and death, feelings of isolation and resignation, and questions of identity and faith, just to name a few. She's the author of 2 previous collections of poetry and the chapbook, and her work has appeared in American Poetry Review, the Kenyon Review, the New Republic, the North American Review, the Paris Review, and Plowshares, and many other publications as well. And she joins me now to talk about her new book. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Peter.
One of the challenges in talking about a collection of poetry like this is that it contains multitudes. There's so much to talk about. You could spend an hour on each of these poems easily. So I guess my question to you is, what was the question in your mind when you were pulling these poems together for a collection? Or what was the main idea, the main organizing principle behind putting these poems together under one title?
A Camouflage of Specimens and Garments is a book about identity. It's a book that examines the ways that we adopt false identities as a way to protect ourselves against a world that often feels threatening or beyond our control. So I guess in using all of these different voices, I was trying to create a speaker who uses her own voice in certain letters that happen between these persona poems, but also to create a sort of fluctuation in identity or an adoption of identity to allow us all to think about the ways that we use identity as a form of protection.
As a form of protection?
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by that?
So I think when we move through the world, we often make use of different masks with different people and in different situations. And so that's kind of, in a smaller sense, our personal ways of making use of identity as a form of protection. This particular speaker, there's a more extreme situation where she writes these letters where it's obvious that there's a certain sense of struggle and illness, and she adopts the voices of classical composers and mythological figures as a way of making sense of her world.
When you speak about identity, I was thinking of this poem called A Dictionary with Foresight is 2020. Mm-hmm. And the first stanza, dressed with a self that cannot last, I break the bread of the moment. And it goes on to talk about being super aware of who I am right now is not who I'm going to be in the future. And it's just a fascinating look at who we will become and who we are right now.
Yeah, and there's a reason that that's one of the earliest poems in the book. It does seek to sort of introduce that aspect of an identity that shifts and changes.
Throughout this book, you use a variety of forms of repetition. There are a lot of poems that start as a dictionary of. What draws you to the technique of repetition as part of a way of getting your idea across?
So I love repetition for its song-like qualities. One of the things I very much believe in is reading a poem with the instinct instead of the intellect. So I believe in reading with our ear and with our hearts in a way instead of with our minds, or as much as with our minds. And I think repetition creates a music and creates a sort of song that we respond to on a level. I always compare the way I think about poems to some degree to songs we hear on the radio, right? So we have the actual linguistic message, but it's reinforced by that more emotionally immediate music. And poems are the same way. The language is meant to create a music that allows us to emotionally respond. And if I think about my influences, people like Federico Garcia Lorca, these are, you know, he's a poet who really uses that movement through language and music and repetition to create that emotional immediacy.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I found myself at first wondering where the logic was, and I only began to appreciate these poems when I realized that the images were more associative in
Absolutely.
A way. They were, I don't want to say tricking me, mm-hmm. but on a subconscious level, they were bringing me to an emotion without saying, there's an emotion, go
yes,
feel it.
Exactly. And that's the goal of my poems. I don't necessarily want people to be able to say this poem means or this poem is about. I want it to instinctively feel right. Archibald MacLeish says a poem should not mean but be. And I believe in the experience of the poem as a whole that we take as an experience.
Mm-hmm. And more of a question than an answer.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about your background as a poet. When did you discover that you were a poet?
I was either fortunate or unfortunate to figure out that I was a poet really early on. I was probably about 9 or 10 years old, and at my grandmother's house, my grandparents' apartment in Brooklyn, and I was doing what kids often do on holidays, being very bored while the adults had coffee. And so I ended up in the back room of the apartment where there were exactly two books. There was Emily Dickinson and Edgar Allan Poe, sort of these selected poem collections. And I was an avid reader already, and I already loved words, but I hadn't had a lot of experience with poetry. And I found myself in this back room picking up especially Emily Dickinson's poems and reading them and understanding immediately that this was something I hadn't ever experienced before. And that emotional immediacy that I just talked about was one of the things that I saw here. And so at that point, I was so moved and changed by this experience. I was like, you know, I imagine myself as this little kid reading these poems aloud to herself, such a strange image. But I was reading them, and I continued to go to that back room afterward for visits and sort of re-experience these books. And then I thought to myself, so this has done this to me. This has made me realize my emotional reality and a sort of shared emotional experience that I hadn't experienced before. I felt like Dickinson knew me and my experience in a way that no one had. And I thought, if I can do this, if I can give this experience to others, and also if I can express this experience in this way, that's an incredible thing. So at 9 or 10, I started writing, of course, really bad poems.
Imitations of Emily Dickinson with the dashes
and everything. Right. Well, no, I don't think I used dashes, but I was definitely using nature imagery.
Okay.
And I was definitely using probably about the same line length. I was thinking about music. I was rhyming. And so from there, I was just addicted to poems. And I worked really hard to not be a poet. At one point, I applied to law school and I got in and I thought, I'm going to go be a lawyer and be like a normal person. But it just wasn't meant to be. I've always returned to poems.
And do you still return to Emily Dickinson from time to time?
Oh, absolutely. She continues to be one of the most incredible, challenging influences. I mean, I can't think of a poet who uses word choice in such an incredibly precise and exactly right way as Dickinson.
But Poe didn't seem to capture your attention or your love as much.
Oh, no. I loved Poe at the time. I mean, okay. I remember reading like Annabel Lee and The Raven. But Dickinson was different. I think the connection to nature was something I already felt, and also the emotional complexity underneath the words, the fact that they were a surface, like a lake surface, and I knew that there was all of those unsaid things underneath, and that to me was what was really interesting.
So what's it like being a poet nowadays and having to sort of pitch yourself all the time? Is it a slog? What's it like being a poet?
I think it's really important to keep that pitching, as you call it, separate from the writing, and to remember why you write. So I'm now a poet who has, you know, three books. You know, I'm published in literary journals, and there is a sense that I have to be out there, you know, promoting myself and my poems. But it's important for me to remember that that's not what poems are about for me, that poems are very much about my internal experience and my connection to the world. So I sort of let the left hand do things without the right hand knowing. So I send poems out and I do many readings all over the country. I'm about to go on this crazy traveling adventure for this book. And I do all of those things. I have this public persona. This is kind of in keeping with the theme of the book, actually, kind of interestingly
enough.
The fact that we have to put those, So I have sort of thought about that as a separate identity from the me I am when I'm at my desk, which is a very private me, working really hard to just find those words that say in the best way the things that I want to say and leave those things unsaid that should just resonate.
Is there a certain identity that, I mean, you say there's the you at your desk writing and the you here in the studio. Is there an identity that is better for the market at selling poetry? Is that something that you have to do, just create this new marketable Jennifer Militello?
Yes. The very together Jennifer Militello, who loves to be out talking to people and reading her poems and who has great relationships with other poets. And, you know, of course, I love to read the work of other poets. But again, that's a sort of private experience. And so, yes, there does have to be a persona Jennifer Militello. And I try to get along with her as much as I can. but she's not my favorite me. So I do it. And it's part of the deal. And it's okay because I believe in poetry as a really important thing in the world. So.
Mm-hmm. You teach in the MFA program at New England College.
I do.
What do you tell your students who want to be poets? What kind of advice do you give them?
So I tell them, as I've just said, in some ways, to care about the writing first. I tell them to work to be influenced, to read voraciously, to find out what poets are doing that you admire and mimic it, not to worry about publication for a very long time, just to work at getting better and to experiment, because often you stumble on those things that work for you. And I think the more that you move forward out of your comfort zone, the more likely you are to stumble on that thing that's the next thing that you should be doing and that's successful for you.
Well, Jennifer, thank you very much for coming in and speaking to me about your new collection of poetry.
Thank you for having me, Peter. It's been terrific.
That's Jennifer Militello. She's the author of the new collection of poetry, A Camouflage of Specimens and Garments. And you can find a list of the top 5 books on Jennifer's bookshelf at nhpr.org. And we've been doing this bookshelf segment for nearly a year now, which means there is a wealth of conversations about fiction, nonfiction, and poetry in our archive. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, and you'll be able to enjoy all of our conversations about books. Just search for The Bookshelf from NHPR. And don't forget to tell us what you've been reading lately. Send your recommendations to us by email, books@nhpr.org, or tweet us at @NHPRBookshelf. This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening.